This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes sometimes leaders make is this idea that like everybody should be flexing to them, right? And I think one of the skill sets that I think some of the strongest leaders we know is that they actually are really good at understanding the needs of their people.
Welcome back to the Color Money Podcast. Now, today we have a repeat guest, and this is one of the most dynamic female leaders in this entire real estate industry, Mrs. Kimber Mankiti. Welcome, Kimber. I'm excited to have you and talk about today the so many variations of leadership and the lessons, the tools, the experiences that we've gained through leadership. And so welcome. I'm excited to have you today.
I'm excited for this conversation. The fact that I get to have it with you and Bo, I feel like two leaders who I also greatly admire and respect. So we're up for a good time.
It's an exciting conversation. And I think, you know, we talk about leadership as a journey. And I think you've had an opportunity in your life and career to lead in a bunch of different spaces and in a bunch of different times in different contexts. And so I hope today that we can kind of explore some of that and look at leadership from different angles and different environments and in different contexts as we go forward. But I don't know if you want to share, like you've had so many experiences, maybe just when you think about leadership, what are some of the main contexts in which you've had the opportunity to lead?
Yeah, I mean, I think leadership starts really early, right? Like, I mean, you know, even thinking about when I think back, right, to leadership up through school, right? Like being able to step into spaces to be able to kind of come forward and recognize that like the activity that you do can create opportunity and access for other people. And so I feel like that was a journey that started really early for me. And when I look at the more formal evolution of that in the real estate industry, from just like, you know, the world of leading a phenomenal team in Washington, D.C., to the brokerage side of Kellams Capital Properties that expands now, right, Fredericksburg, Towson, Washington, D.C., and then into like more broader aspects of the region and beyond. So it's been a phenomenal journey of growth for sure. I think it's one of the places outside of parenting that I feel like I have learned and been challenged the most. So I think it creates sort of that pathway to our own personal development.
So take us back to that first, like your first experience, I think, you know, maybe in the real estate, it was leading a sales team. So what were some of the key leadership lessons that you learned in sort of building and growing the sales team?
It's easier sometimes, right, to know the story. So when you're going in reverse, I like the lessons and the comfort versus when we go forward. So looking back, right, I think the theme of like self-leadership is sort of where it all begins, is how are we leading ourselves? Because I think this idea of like anything that you're leading is actually a mirror to you, good and bad, right? So that means like there were times when the team, like people we could really dial in. I like to get in it. So like I was a player coach leader. I was on the field. I was selling beside the team. And that had a lot of benefits, but also a lot of challenges. So when I look at the gaps, like the ability for like prioritizing that the growth element versus like just driving hard to achieve some really big goals, I think was a big lesson early on, right? Like when you're on the field and things are really flat, that's great, but it can also be really challenging as you're trying to grow and have those relationships with lots of different people while also being on the field. And so that dynamic works, I think, in a small setting, but as it starts to build and leverage becomes more important, I think that became a big ceiling for me that I had to push through in the leadership journey.
Were you always a leader? Would this come from sports? Did it come from your background? Were you like ASB president in middle school and stuff like that? Like, when did this start?
You know, it did start really early. I feel like the bossy kids, right? Like, so, like I was often the one, even with my cousins. Like, I remember very early on, like always getting, like, I think I'm a teacher at heart. And so I think it started early there, but 100%, right? Like the competitive process, the election, like running for office in the fifth grade, up through like, right, my sorority in college. And some of that was just like seeing the gaps and wanting to make things better and kind of jumping into a space when you saw something that needed to be done. And I think that translates quickly into leadership.
So we had this conversation with Kaleo Kina, and he was talking about the Navy and leadership and his journey. Do you think leaders are born Do you think leaders are taught leadership? Is it an innate quality that you think people have that can truly lead humans? Or like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's an innate profile to it, right? To want to kind of lean into that space. And I think like anything, you can be a really talented, naturally skilled at something. But if you're not building upon it and you're not growing, like it actually can be detrimental. And so I think like, it's what we say, right? That we tell our boys all the time, that skill will beat you over time. That innate ability, if you've got somebody who's really disciplined and is really committed to it, I think leadership has that edge where you have that drive to want things to be better, to see the problems and want to lean into them. And I think it'll put you in your place quickly if you're not, I think, honing those skills.
Now, you said something I want to go back to. You said, and continually building the skills of leadership. How is that done? My perspective is leadership is like, you can read all the books you want, but you're not going to know it until you're in it. Like, it's experiential learning. What are some ways, in your opinion, that leadership can be taught or you can continue to hone in on those skills without practicing on people, you know?
I think it's like, what's required, right? Like, how do you lead people? How do you understand people? I think one of the biggest mistakes sometimes leaders make is this idea that like everybody should be flexing to them, right? And I think one of the skill sets that I think some of the strongest leaders we know is that they actually are really good at understanding the needs of their people and making sure people are set up for success against what is needed from them, right? And what that looks like. Because I think there's this like love of your people and the heart for the people that you're leading, but that also means the heart for them to succeed and what's required for that. So I think being able to really be clear and articulating and defining where you're going and communicating that, I think leaders like really that communication aspect, but then also that ability to translate that into like measurable deliverables as you're trying to scale and grow business. So I think it's been that balance of both, hey, what does it look like to be out front? But then also what does it look like to get beside and understand how to guide people through that process? And I think that there's a lot of lessons in that. It's different when you're leading and you can be in the fight with people. You're on in the field. We think about the I do it, we do it, they do it process.
Yeah.
And that I do it, we do it is like, it's a really comfortable place to lead in a lot of ways, right? Because you can lead, especially when we see for like in the real estate space, leading a small team can look like leading your family, right? Like it can look like that. And it starts to be different when all of a sudden there become layers in your organization and that leadership and what you're modeling and what you have to work against, right? Because a lot of times part of leadership is recognizing those gaps, that what you don't have and how do you complement that with also, you know, without shifting the overall, like the culture and how it shows up in the organization, which I watch a lot of leaders really struggle with.
How do you think about this? You talked a little bit about having a heart for people, but having a heart for their success. And this challenge in leadership of how do you find that line between support, nurturing, and care, and then also accountability and stretching and failure and leaving the nest? Like, how has that played itself out in your journey, or what are some of your perspective on that?
I know in the organization, you know, that Bo and I've led for a long time together, you can start collecting people because you love people, right? And we like look up and you have people that are in roles that are not serving them and not serving the organization. And I think there is that balance of like loving people enough to get them into spaces where they can win and succeed and either help building up the gaps, but also not like having them just continue to bang away at something that actually isn't additive to them and isn't additive to the organization, which I think is actually one of the more challenging aspects of leadership, right? Because we look up and people are amazing people and the humans that they are. But from a leadership perspective, where you leading them actually sometimes is the self-discovery of that this isn't actually the right seat for them. And what is the place that is? And that actually often in the moment is not an easy process. But being able to have like leaning into that, I think, is a critical component of effective leadership.
It's really interesting. You know, one of the things that's always struck with me is this idea that we talk about there being talent or not talent or good or bad. Like, we tend to want to see things in like these diametrically opposed things. And so much of leadership is contextual, right? Like, a certain leadership style works in one moment and is horrible in the next moment. An individual that we think could be an amazing human being, extremely talented or smart, but not a fit for a position. And so I think this desire to see people in their totality, which is necessary for leadership, but also see them in the context of the role they have, is one of the more challenging elements of building a team and putting it together.
Well, I think it's also their journey, because the person you're leading today, as they continue to evolve, growing them, it seems like it's this never ending, I don't want to call it a battle, but this never ending thing with people where it's constantly the way that you led somebody, the way that I lead my kids now that they're teenagers was vastly different than the way I led them 4 or 5 years ago. I think it's almost like reflection. What am I doing and who do I need to become to be able to lead the people around me the best way for the growth of whatever the goal is?
Yes, I think that's spot on. I think that's the question, right? Who do I need to become to be able, like, and I think so often, even in our hiring process, right, we're a lot of times like, okay, we're going to just throw out the people, keep throwing out the people. And yeah. I think good leaders have to actually ask the question and hold up a mirror and say, okay, well, who do I need to become to be able to? Because at some point, right, like you could either continue to cycle through, which we see a lot of people in the industry and out of the industry do, or you could ask the question like, hey, is there something that I need to be looking at to be able to say, where do I need to grow my leadership to be able to continue to lead the organization to the next level? And I think a lot of times we hit that ceiling and we think it's just about, oh, well, I got to get better people. And maybe you need to actually get better leadership. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, who do you model? Who am I seeing? Who am I learning from? Who am I wanting to demonstrate behaviors from? What's that? Who's that in your world?
And I think some of it's also that there's not a singular person, but I think mm-hmm. it's borrowing from different styles of leadership that are like either match yours or that you see success in. Like I have the benefit, you know, on the sister podcast, right? Empire Builder, to do a lot of like conversations with, you know, both, we got four amazing co-hosts there who all lead dramatically different businesses. And they've been really good teachers for me and certainly in different styles of leadership in different levels of organizations mm-hmm. and different mindsets, right? Like, you know, Seychelle is this incredible rapid problem solver. And so she's able to like jump in really quickly and meet the immediate needs of her team. You've got like Wendy, who's a great strategic thinker. And so she sees it out and then is able to paint that picture. Sarah leads a large organization, but has this incredible way of modeling like intensity to her goals, but a deep love for her people. And you see that all the way through the organization. And Tiffany, I think, has really incorporated like fun into how she leads her team, right? It's very experiential. It's like they do real estate, but they really like our community and fun and they build together. So it's been powerful. I mean, probably what you guys see too is like being able to have a level of depth with people where you really get to see how they show up in different aspects of their life has been a good teacher for me in leadership. I mean, and I also love, you know, there's also some other just outside like people who I also look at like a Sarah Blakely or something like or Billy who build some pretty phenomenal businesses, but do it sort of in their own style, which I think is really powerful that they're unapologetic about who they are, but also build their teams around them to also like mitigate some of those gaps because we all have them.
We all have
and gaps, so do you have people around them that help them stay in their sweet spot and stay in like their joy zones?
Well, tell me a little bit about like how have we evolved with leadership through these evolving times of our industry? We've obviously seen the last 2 years have been some of the roughest years that we've seen in real estate. How does your leadership need to change or evolve through that? As you've grown, as the industry's changed, good market, bad market, good people, bad people, that kind of thing.
I think there's like this, which I love, right, in the Brené Brown world of like introducing or this language of vulnerability, authenticity of like seeing people for who they and where they are and acknowledging the hard. I think a lot of times from a leadership perspective, we're just like, we cast the vision and we race charge the hill, like, let's go. And the reality is like, it has been a hard season. And I think being able to acknowledge that for people, hold space for them in that, but then also acknowledge that like, nobody told you it would be easy, right? Like we can't stay in the zone of just like, yeah, it's really hard. And here's a path out of the hard and getting really tactical. But I also think being able to be seen and see people is really important. And that balance of like, for me, there's been a deep evolution of like embracing the whole person as a leader and not just feeling like you always have to. Wendy Hess, one of our OPs in the Maryland region, would get on calls with me in the regional role and be like, this is the only place, like I just have to be presidential everywhere, right? Like you have to put your chin up and act like, you know, it's not hard. And the reality is that this is hard work. And as a leader, it's okay to have show your people that it's hard. I had my leaders on a call yesterday and I just found out just the tragic news that one of our agents was on the plane that was a tragedy in and of itself, but that we lost one of our agents in Virginia and his wife and his two girls. And like, you know, it's right here. I mean, but we were in Washington, D.C. Like Beau and I fly into that airport all the time. So that for me has been a part of both the good and the challenge, because these are hard times and we're leading people and it's okay to like give people a moment. And so we just took a moment and like reminded, you know, like we push hard and we're pushing against goals, but like this life is precious and it's short. And like, are we taking time to like be in alignment with who we want to be and who we want to be spending time with? Because we're not promised that we get another 50 years to live it out. So I think that's been for me, a season of like, you have to embrace and give people the grace for this moment, but also like a pathway to the next thing.
Now, one of the things you were talking about earlier was about self-leadership. And switching gears a little bit from thinking about leading others to truly leading yourself, we've heard it. I mean, I've heard Gary say it a million times, that the privilege to lead others, but you've got to truly be able to lead yourself at a high level. What does that mean to you? What does self-leadership mean to you? And how have you grown in that area?
Sometimes it's like doing the things I don't want to do. like, what are those things? Like, I think there is like this, what did you say you were going to do? And did you do it? And the answer is like, I don't do them all the time. Like, I fall short, like the consistency of it. But I think it is like, first, who do you want to be? How are you showing up and modeling that? And then holding, like looking in the mirror and saying, okay, where am I doing this? And where am I falling short?
You have to have authentic conversations with yourself though, right?
With yourself, right?
You got to be real and look at yourself in the mirror, huh?
What are you doing and why are you doing it? I think a lot of times, especially in the real estate world, we see a lot of people who get on this wheel and the business is leading them. They're not leading the business. And mm-hmm. I think it's because they're not having that conversation with themselves of like, is this thing that I started out? Like, it's okay that you started a journey 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and today it doesn't serve you. But I think you do have to have that space. I think a lot of that comes from reflection, white space. Like, you know, I look up and I have a schedule sometimes that's 35 hours a week of meetings. So like, how do you lead? Yeah. I can't lead myself in that. I'm just running. And so I think you do have to look, you have to gate spaces for that reflection and like asking yourself those questions.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
What have you found really effective in making those spaces? And then like, what, you know, stimulus? Is it books? Is it pockets? Like, what helps get you reflective on yourself and where you are and where you are in leadership? Like, how do you create that space for yourself?
Yeah, I think you have to ask good questions. So I think we've got some, you know, there's good questions around, like, for me, especially, you know, we're at the top of the year, looking back around, like, hey, where were the things? What brought joy? Like, what are the highlights when you look back? What are those things, right? Looking in reverse. And then looking forward around, how do you incorporate more of that? So, like, that's one of the tactical things I think about a lot. I have a joy file on my phone, on my iPhone, right? The folder. And I'm able to put things in there throughout, like, right, a season, a week, that we're, like, really getting in tune with the things that really, like, sparked something in me. And then trying to get real about how do I get more of that. But I think you do have to create space. Like, a year ago, in 2024 was the first year I did it, I was literally just running in scheduled meetings until the end of the week, 5 o'clock on Friday. And so I just held back. I said, you know what, I'm put on the schedule, right? I'm not taking any meetings after 12 o'clock on Friday. I'm not going to do anything that I didn't put there on Friday. And so that created just an open block, because what was happening is I couldn't get time to reflect for myself. I couldn't get time for important meetings that weren't connected or linked in. I think you have to put it, if you're running it as an executive level, like, right, an entrepreneur, like, where is that time? You can't assume that it's going to happen naturally. You do have to build it into the schedule. Or that's, like, for me, sometimes that's out. Like, I got to get out. I got to take a walk. I got to, like, turn off the alerts on my phone. I got to have, for me, it's actually filtering out the noise, because there's so much noise coming in from different places all throughout the week, personally and professionally.
So, Kimber, you just talked a little bit about getting in touch with our authentic selves. And as Daniel said, like, our own personal journey of leadership. Can you talk a little bit of, like, in different scenarios? You talked a little bit about, like, there's times when it's all going gangbusters and everything seems to be working out, and there's times when things aren't working out. There's times of great sorrow and grief and tragedies. And, like, how do you think about what does the moment call for from you as a leadership? And how do you tap into that part of yourself that connects to that moment, if that makes sense? Like, imagine these different contexts of leadership, they actually call for different things. Like, the existential crisis, you know, the organization's future is a jeopardy on this issue, versus, you know, somebody just lost somebody in their lives and there was death and there's this tragedy that people are gripping with, or people are afraid of the markets change. Like, there are these moments. I'd just interested how you think about tapping into those pieces of yourself that allow you to show up. Because as a leader, we need to show up authentically, but we also need to show up right for the moment. Mm-hmm. And how that moment changes. How have you adjusted to that and found ways to lead in those moments?
One good resource was, I think Gary introduced this a while back to us, was an article on wartime peacetime, sort of what does the wartime leader and the peacetime leader look like? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I think, Bo, to your point, like the answer is that we often are living in a world that sort of has a moment that looks like a wartime and a moment that looks like peacetime. So that was a good framework for like, okay, what is the profile that sets up over here, the profile? I also think a lot of that can mirror masculine and feminine styles of leadership. And so I think it's also being aware of like, what is your natural style of leadership? Where might you need to adjust based on the situations, right? Like I'm a very collaborative leader. So I like to, you know, have a team around me and be able to bounce ideas off of people, but that can also show up as indecisive. It can show up in a world where there's a need for certainty to be able to lean into actually like being able to make a decision and go forward and be okay that like you're actually 90% likely to get it wrong. That if you paused and thought about it and taken a more collaborative style, you might have made a better decision, but the situation actually required or called for this decisive, hey, we're going to go here, and allows everybody to move forward. And I think sometimes when things are hard, people can get stuck. And so being able to like pick a path and just pick the path and go has a lot of value. And so that even just like having that different thinking was helpful for me to be like, okay, you know what? Like I actually might find a lot of value in showing up with a collaborative style. But in this current moment and situation, that's actually creating friction to get to the next step for the people around me. And we see that a lot, right? Leaders are looking for, like a lot of our people are looking for us to be very prescriptive. And I think there's also that balance of like, hey, I painted this big picture, but people actually need to know, what should I do next right now? And our assumption that like they know how to paint 1, 2, 3. And you actually have to go say to them, which is what we started these morning huddles several years ago. I have an hour of huddles in the morning from 8:15 to 9:15 with the different teams that I lead. But that is setting people up very clearly around what are your priorities, not assuming that they just know, especially in times of crisis or times of challenge, what they should be doing to move the goals forward.
A lot of the way that I've led in my organizations has been through consensus, because I like to get everyone on board. And you agree, like, okay, here, I'm going to keep talking and tell you.
We're all bought in.
Versus, no, we're doing this and I'm making the decision. This is the way it needs to be. And good, bad, or indifferent, we'll figure that out after the fact. And it creates more uncertainty and longer meetings when we're trying to get everyone on the same page versus, here's what we're doing. Let's go.
And in times when there's like, right, an extra 6 million transactions in the market, you had a little bit more time to decide like what marketing campaign should we could run, versus when like everybody's like trying to survive, like we don't have time to like think about all the pieces. Just be like, no, we're going to focus on these priorities, say no to everything else. And then I found that's hard. Like there's resistance to that, especially if you built a culture where people can collaborate and ask questions and challenge, and you want that, right? But there are moments when you're like, we got to go here. Because if not, like, there's like, you know, something's coming in that's going to take us all out.
Well, I think that's also that wartime and peacetime CEO mindset. Mm-hmm. In wartime, there is no consensus. We're making decisions and we got to go.
There are times you just got to go. And there's times we have time for that. So I've always wanted to ask this question. And so I figured, since we have you.
In 20 years, you haven't asked it yet.
That's the question I haven't asked that I really want to ask. So you referenced it. You referenced masculine and feminine leadership. And you've done a ton of work with women around leadership. You've worked with a lot of very powerful female leaders. I'm really interested in your view on masculine and feminine leadership and how that plays out. Like, what elements of those two energies, masculine and feminine energy, show up in leadership, and how male leaders can benefit from learning feminine energy. And also, I think we have a lot of women entering leadership that are actually mirroring not sometimes the greatness of feminine energy. They're mirroring sort of the worstness of masculine leadership. And so, you know, female leadership is an interesting thing. And female leaders bring a whole nother potential open up. As you have diversity of people, you have diversity of leadership perspectives. And oftentimes when people are entering a space, they have a tendency to copy the dominant group. And so I'd be very interested in your perspective on masculine and feminine energies in leadership and the impetus of women showing up in leadership and copying at times the worst of male leadership and not adding the huge amount they have to add to that space.
And again, I think it's masculine, feminine, like people kind of on that range in terms of how they show up. And Bo and I were in a meeting together, a pretty intense meeting with a lot of with several executives, and I was the only woman at the table, and you know, there were strong feelings and strong positions, and I feel like egos were high. And when we, you know, as we walked out of the meeting, I looked at one of the other guys and I was like, you know, this would be very different if it was a table of women. He was like, I know. But I think part of that is because there's like, there's less of a need to like, I don't know, I think feminine leadership kind of sees that strength of different perspectives and not necessarily like, I don't think the egos are always at the table as much. And Daniel, you said it, like this collaborative, like this idea of all the voices we like want to hear from different people and hear those different perspectives. And I think get to the point of decision. Like, how do we get to a place where it's not maybe a perfect win of like, and no one's 100% like this, it was my way. This is what we did. And everybody did what I said. To me is one of the things I see in the strength of female leadership. It's also the challenge because I think to the point of like decisiveness, it can mean that, you know, that consensus building can take more time and an organization can die in the process. Because you got to make some decisions that help move the business forward. So I think that's one of the big ones. And I think you're right. Like, I think sometimes this idea of blinders of like, hey, nobody says the things that like that need to be said, right? That the ego of like, hey, a leader, I have to follow them. I got my marching orders and I did what I was told to do. And I think maybe whether it's the ease of approachability, but I think sometimes like women leaders, good and bad, I think sometimes are challenged more in what they, the positions or perspectives that they've brought forward. And I actually think male leaders would benefit from people who will tell them the hard things. Gary and I had a chat a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, I appreciate you speaking into power, like, right, like challenging power. And I think that we need more people who are willing to challenge power. And I think it's one of the things missing nationally and locally, right, across our leadership.
Yeah. What's the role of speaking truth to power now in today's world?
Yeah. And I think leaders, you know, there's an obligation. One of my personal challenges is feeling like there's a, now, and Daniel, to your point, like, right, we talk a lot about wealth building of, do you have an FU number? Like, yeah, you got to be good with where you are. I think sometimes, right? Like, I think there has to be a comfort level to be able to say, like, I'm going to say the hard thing because I'm okay with the consequence. And I think that's privilege. Like, it's privilege to be able to say that because you're right. Like, not everybody's position of where they are and what is required for their families allows them to do that. And so I think you do have to be ready for the consequence sometimes of, because speaking up is not always the popular thing to say and can have implications. And I think there's a part of our world that, especially from our leaders, requires that.
So do you think that effective leadership in organizations creates an open dialogue? Or do you think that there's a point where some people, not that I don't value your opinion, but at what point can you speak up? Is it a title? Like, do you run an organization and have an open dialogue where everyone voices their opinions? Mm-hmm. Or do you not? Because now we have 15 opinions and we muddy the waters of what, where we need to go and, you know, whose voice we're actually going to listen to.
Yeah, I think creating spaces for that. So like, do you have a process where people can provide feedback, right? Do you have a process where maybe the point of a meeting is to have a, like, it is a brainstorming session. So you're inviting people in, you're teaching at that, right? Like, what does that model look like for how to give feedback? Because I think you have to be careful around that line of like, am I just giving criticism to give criticism, right? Nobody wants that as a leader. But you, what you want is like, you do want to invite a space for feedback that has a benefit to the outcome, right? Either a blind spot that you as a leader might have, or somebody sees, a lot of times, especially if you're disconnected from the field likely sees a different level of execution, like, right? They often know the problem that you're, the solution to the problem you're trying to solve for. And are you listening enough? You have a different level of like, why can't, you know, do that because the economics of that don't work. But are we listening at the level? I think leaders building in a space to listen more, I think is an important growth opportunity. And to your, you have to be careful because you could listen all day long, but when we had a new person come in doing some HR stuff for us. And, you know, first thing he did was like surveys, like he interviewed all of our employees. And I called Bo. I was so fired up. I was like, what are we doing? People have to be working.
She's still complaining about someone asking people questions.
Well, yeah. I mean, because I was like, what are we doing? We're in crisis mode, right? We're in wartime.
Yeah.
No, I'm not actually really interested in whether or not you like feel good about the way, what kind of snacks are in the cabinet, right? Like, right. Like, you won't be here to have a snack in the cabinet. And so it was sort of like, how do you create space for that and do it in a way that helps move the organization forward? Because you're right, sometimes you open Pandora's box and it's hard to close.
How do you take criticism as a leader, as feedback, and then make positive change? Because we all get defensive. We all have those innate human abilities. Is it time? Is it space? Is it just hear it and then let it digest and then reflect later? Like, how do you compartmentalize that?
Yeah. And perfectionism for this girl, right, is real, right? So this idea of like defensiveness because it challenges like how you see yourself, I think is a very real thing.
Right.
But you better be careful if you don't have people around you who will tell you the truth. And I think some of that is built in. If you look up, especially, I think this is one of the biggest challenges for leaders as you're growing an organization. If you look up and everybody that's around you is paid to be there, no one's telling you the truth. And so no one's telling you the truth. And so you better get, whether that's coaching, whether that's building your own. We talked about this in one of our other podcasts, I think I joined you guys for, like building your board of directors. You better have people whose opinions and perspectives and feedback, one, you know, is couched in love, but they also have no economic benefit to tell you like the thing. And that's probably been one of the biggest like places for me, like of growth, is that being able to have people who have no financial incentive in the feedback that they're giving me, that they're giving it because they see it, you know, they see it. And self-awareness, like unconscious incompetence is a good place to live for a lot of us. You don't know what it is. And so you don't have to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Because the second you know, then you're like, shit, that is a girth edge for me. Now, what am I going to do about it?
Well, this is that maturity of being able to look at yourself in the mirror and see your flaws.
And hold them both, right? Like, how do you hold your greatness and your flaws at the same time? Like, how do you look in the mirror and say, here's an amazing, tremendous human being and leader, and here's all these deeply flawed things as a human being? And like, that, I think, is the journey. Like, it's so key to the journey.
Well, we all have kids of a certain age. So like, they're always a mirror telling you where you're flawed. Oh, so that helps, right? Like,
or tell you how great they are. Tell you how great they are.
Exactly. Get a teenager and that solves everything. I just want to add on that point too, is like this idea of like what got you here won't get you there, right? Like that adage, I think, is like, it's okay because some people are really good just staying exactly where they are and they'll live in that space. But I think if you're really trying to grow as a leader, one of the hardest things is recognizing the success you had is probably what's holding you back from your next thing. And like, that's hard, right? Because you're like, well, like the thing that you probably are most proud of, like I'm fiercely independent. I can push really hard. I can like that actually is the block for me in growing a bigger organization. And so are you aware of that? And then what do you want to do about it? And sometimes the answer is that maybe you don't want to do anything about it and you're good. And that's okay too.
Brett taught me a couple of things. We were recently just talking about some of the things that are shrinking inside of my world and responsibilities are going away. And I'm like, I don't want to have all these things happening and all these balls juggling. And he goes, when things get tough, it makes a whole lot of sense to shrink. And then just like protect yourself. When we're in times of greatness, let's go try this. Let's throw some money at that. Let's see if that works. We can't play that game when we're in wartime.
So I got one last thought as we get towards the end here. You mentioned something earlier about the responsibility of leadership. And I guess I'm asking in two ways. One is the definition of leadership. Are you a leader because people follow you? Or does a leader have some responsibility in where they're taking people or what that journey means for the people? And I think in our day and age, just, I mean, not to at all be political, but we just saw it in our, we had a major tragedy. And like, what's the obligation of a leader? Like, is there an obligation? Is there a responsibility when you're in a leadership seat? Or are you just a leader because people are willing to follow you?
I feel strongly that there's obligations of leadership, right? To whom much is given, much is required. And I think there is positional leadership, right? Like you just earn a seat and that's different, right? Than I think this innate, you see people who are not, like they are leaders by no title or by no, like they are inspiring people. They're speaking to people. I think that is actually leadership and what voice you use to shape an industry, like, right? A company, a country, like are powerful. And so I do think that there is that piece because you're sometimes looking at, I think I've had the benefit from a leadership perspective, both locally and nationally, right? Like serving in the executive leadership of our National Association of Realtors, like being able to really see these different levels of the industry. And I think that comes with it a responsibility to also be able to find ways to influence representation at those different levels, to influence like a perspective that maybe people don't have for whatever reasons. So I think it is, you know, I think when you think about the definition of leadership, right, you're like, right, inspiring, leading, motivating towards that common shared vision and goal. And you're like holding that up and helping people to come along that journey and what that means for them. But I think also speaking to, maybe it is that speaking truth to power, that like really seeing that vantage point creates, I think, a responsibility to unlock, right, other people's access to that and ability to continue to drive it forward.
So I was talking to my friend who coaches for the Falcons, and we were talking about this thought of leadership and influence. And there's a lot of people, when you ask them to be a leader, they're not ready for it. They're not prepared for it. They don't think they're compensated for it. They have no interest in it. But if you're like, hey, what is leadership? Leadership is influence. I need you to influence a decision or influence a behavior. So when you ask people in your organization, I don't need you to be on part of my leadership committee or whatnot, but can you help influence this initiative for the rest of the people and model these kind of behaviors? It's a lot more palatable for them than this whole thought that us leaders think about. Well, the next person up, of course they want leadership. That's the goal, is it not? I want responsibility. And it's an interesting concept.
Yeah. I mean, I think one last thought is just like, there is a difference, right? I love the way you say it's influence, right? So you can influence people in a lot of different ways. And you can have a tremendous impact on speaking to people's realities and to their fears, their hopes, their dreams. And the question is, what do you do with that? Like, there can be leadership. There can be influence. It does not always have to be positive. And so you have some obligation to wield that power and that influence thoughtfully as we work with people. So I guess as we wrap up here, because we're running out of time, is there one last like leadership thought, Kimber, that you would want folks to have as they think about like growing as a leader, no matter where they are in their journey? Is there, if you had like one thing, Kimber's one piece of leadership advice, what would it be?
I think it all starts with you. So that journey of leadership and influence, right, starts with yourself. So I think asking yourself where you want to be and starting that journey to get there, I think is the first step in the leadership journey. So that's one that we all get to go on. And even if you don't see yourself as a leader, you are, because you're leading yourself every day. And so I think we all have that opportunity to grow and develop in leadership and harness our influence for good.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.